Oh, hi, podcast listeners. There's many ways you can listen to the Real Nerds podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can also subscribe on Stitcher Radio. You want to send us a Twitter message? You can do that. It's so easy, at Real Nerds. Like us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast. You can visit our website, realnerdspodcast.com, where there'll be a lot of articles for you to not only read, but to listen to our previous shows. Do you like your stories told through pictures? Then you can also follow us at Real Nerds on Instagram. You can also call us, 720-6NERDS5. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Here we go again, it's our film explosion. A movie countdown of real devotion. It could get long, so bring your ibuprofen. I'm telling you all, it's a film explosion.
What's got the best acting? What's got the best direction?
The cream of the crop, here's our selection.
From comedy to drama, even blaxploitation. I'm telling you all, it's a film explosion.
I'm telling you all, it's a film explosion! Film explosion!
Who are you gonna call when you wanna listen to a movie podcast? You are totally gonna listen to the Real Nerds podcast, which you are doing right now. Every week on Real Nerds podcast, we see a new movie and we podcast our experience to the world. Except every once in a while, we do a thing I like to call film explosion. I think you came up with the name, Brad, but I'm just going to take credit for it.
I did, and you can have it.
Yes! Film explosion is mine! Mine! let's go to center stage and introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Zach.
And stage left?
Brad.
Nice. We've been doing this for 13 years.
Oh, God. When does it end?
Never.
When is the curse lifted?
In fact, we've been doing it so long. This is the last year that we're going to have retro film explosions.
Oh, sad.
Because we're actually coming up on the 10th year anniversary of us doing 1985.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah, I guess it's a good thing that I started Glee of 33 then.
Yes.
Who knew back then that we'd still be doing every... I don't know, four decades a year?
A lot of movies.
A lot of movies.
But what I really like is because I've said this before, if this is your first time listening to Film Explosion, first, thank you. Second, we take our 10 favorite films throughout 1984 and we reveal them to each other. And Brad has prepared a Blu-ray for us with the trailers.
That's the saddest part of the episode is people at home don't get to watch all the work I put into.
I mean, you can make a YouTube version of this and put the trailers with it.
I can't because of copyright issues.
Oh, right. Yeah. Copyright.
You get flagged right away.
Lame.
These promotional things that they put out for free to people, we can't use them.
Yeah. Weird. But anyways, how this works is we have our 10 favorite films of the year. Again, I always stress this. Some might be critical darlings. For the most part, I always base mine on how much I watch them and how much I enjoy them. Because I think that's the best barometer for how good a film is. I'm not a film critic. I'm a film lover. So me being critical on film happens every once in a while. Have you seen Mean Girls 2024? But for the most part, I try to enjoy all film. And my tastes are really weird. But I really liked 1984 because there was a lot of movies that I really liked. My top five are pretty much set in stone, but below that, I could have made another 10 films.
Yeah, it was kind of
very
rough.
Easily.
Yeah, the top five are similar to mine. Like I knew what I wanted. Bottom five, I'm like, well, depending on the day.
Yeah, in fact, one of my favorite franchises is in this list, and it's really low on my list, and that's because there's so many films that I really like in this year. In fact, one of my films I think I like a lot more than other people, just because other people don't know what they're talking about. But so we'll play the trailer if the film is introduced. If someone else has, you know, it later on their list, we will not play the trailer again.
But the other person will get to beat that other person with a microphone for sweeping up.
Very hard.
Yeah. You wore your pads today, right?
Yes, okay, always.
Good.
So yeah, that's what we do. That's how we do film explosions. And Brad has optimized the order randomly for this list.
Get us through as fast as possible.
Surprisingly, Brad's first. Huh. Huh. Just kidding. So, Brad, why don't you kick off 1984 for me?
Yeah, I rigged it. We're going to do all 10 of mine first, and then we're going to do Zach's.
I knew it.
Yep. No, yeah. 1984, deep bench of films for this year, much like 82. 83 sucked.
It did suck.
So, Hollywood took a break and then released all these bangers. The next year. So, yeah.
Yeah, you know, you find out when you do these that theatrically, they don't release very many movies in the 80s.
No.
Because now it's all about your first weekend. How much money can you make initially? Back then, it's how much money can we make by showing the same film over and over and over again and let it grow organically.
Yeah, it used to be that, like, you know, something like RoboCop would be in the theaters for like 6 months straight. Yep.
You mean it shouldn't be about quick winnings and it should be about sustainability?
Yeah.
Oh, you're a monster. You're against everything that makes America wonderful and capitalism.
Right? Yeah, that's how I roll.
Yeah. Like, now we've actually gotten to see other films get legs over the last 4 years, which is interesting. Like, some films do carry that.
Yeah. Barbie and Oppenheimer. Like, yeah. Those played.
Yeah.
So long that when they came up for award season, like, it, they never left the theater. They just, like, were still in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Good on them.
Good year. And, I forgot to shout out that 84 is also the year the Ninja Turtles came into existence.
That's right.
So, this is also the 40th anniversary of, you know, the best comic book franchise of all time.
You take it back, you son of a bitch.
Created actually, by my real father.
I was thinking about you because that second and third print of Ninja Turtles 1 is exploding in value.
Yes.
Like, big time.
You have copies, don't you?
I have multiple copies of the second and third printing.
Nice.
So,
yeah, I think
that's what, boys, I'm financing the podcast myself.
Fuck, don't sell those.
No, I can't do that.
Yeah. Although I would not let you sell them.
I am trying to go through and do like a second run. Like, I've got all the issues.
Yeah.
I'm trying to do a backup run of them also before they get too out of price. Yeah. So, speaking of superheroes, my number 10 is a early superhero movie.
Meet little Melvin. He's a 90-pound weakling. Everyone hated Melvin.
I'm gonna take this mop and shove it down your throat.
They teased him.
I wanna do it with you.
Okay.
They taunted him. They tormented him until he had a horrifying accident and fell into a vat of nuclear waste. Transforming little Melvin into a hideously deformed creature of superhuman size and strength. Became the Toxic Avenger. The first superhero born out of nuclear waste.
Holy shit!
I don't know what it was, but it saved my life.
All right, everybody, drop your tacos or I'll blow your brains out.
The Vandals and the Perverts had their way with the little people of Tromaville until the Toxic Avenger ripped them apart. The Toxic Avenger. His face is so terrifying. We can't show it to you now. You'll have to see the movie for yourself. The Toxic Avenger can bend steel with his bare hands.
Oh, we're only kidding. Get it?
Leap small cars in a single bound. He crushes drug pushers. Smashes hit and run drivers. For incredible explosive action, you must see the Toxic Avenger. He's a different kind of hero. The Toxic Avenger is coming to your town. Look out.
So yeah, my number 10 is the Toxic Avenger, New Jersey's greatest superhero. I actually grew up with the Toxic Crusaders because of, like, tangentially Ninja Turtles. I always thought it was a cool character. Like, I had the figure. a couple of them, and but I never watched the film until I met my friends at BizJack Flumpco, who are making very trauma-style movies, and then I finally watched this, and yeah, it's a ton of fun. You know, schlocky, low-budget, like, it's low-budget, but, like, if there's, like, a ton of effects, and they even, like, blow up a car, which is, like, pretty impressive for, like...
Yeah, they show that stunt of him hanging on top of a car, too.
Yeah, I mean, that I think that's a dummy in that shot, but, yeah, I mean, he's on the car for some times, and, yeah, they roll that one, and it explodes, and, yeah, it's, like, a lot of pyrotechnics and things, and, like, a lot of gore effects and props for, you know...
Basically kind of nothing.
For almost nothing, yeah. And, yeah, it's a fun, good time, and...
It's endured so long, there's actually a remake coming out this year.
Yeah, God, that trailer's been out for a while. Where is it?
Yeah.
So, yeah, excited to see how they remake it. And, yeah, I think it's cool. And, like, it's a, you know, a great example of do-it-yourself filmmaking that people should embrace more. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, relatively new entry to my 1984 list at number 10 here.
Nice. My number 10 is a story about two women who have to face danger.
Samantha?
What?
God, what are you trying to do? Give me a heart attack?
What's happening?
Oh, yeah, I guess you are a little confused. I'll go to pep squad practice and split after. So far, I don't know if pep squad practice is on or not. You can't get anybody on the phones.
There's nobody. I mean, there's nobody.
All right, nobody.
Look. Look at this. Here's Doris. This is all that's left of her. This is dust. It's Saturday morning. Where are the goddamn kids? Do you have your MasterCard on you?
No.
Good, because you don't need it. The stores are open!
Okay, girls, hold it right there. You, the blonde, get into the light.
Get a lot of dates this way? Where'd you get this at dime store? I'll be taking requests from all you teenage comet zombies.
Might be all right for date night in the barrio, but if we run into any more of those guys outside, we need a little more stopping power.
Glad to see it.
You dirty rats.
All right. Let's do it.
Night of the Comet.
Number 10 for me is Night of the Comet. I was introduced to this film. It's one of the very first Scream Factory put out. And I want to say it came out on Scream Factory in 2014, maybe earlier. Yeah, so it's about these two valley girls that happen to miss this comet. Weird that tomorrow there's an eclipse. So this comet passes by and turns everybody to dust or to zombies, and then they're just left to their own devices and they go shopping in a mall, and then there's this big conspiracy behind the government and stuff, and it's really silly. It's really funny. Definitely a product of its time. There's harsh lighting in it, not in a bad way. I mean, they use like reds and blues that are really striking in the film.
Very stylized is what...
Yes. Yeah. And it's just a fun movie. Yeah, it's like Valley Girls versus Zombies is the best way I can describe it. Yep.
Yep. I did not enjoy it.
Else. All right.
I did it's not been a enjoy while it since when I saw it.
Yeah, Brad's not a fan.
It's been a while since I've seen it, but I found out about it because of Smodcast, and I would actually like to watch it again with the Scream Factory because I don't own that one. But it's a fun movie.
Yeah, it's really fun.
All right, mine?
Yep.
All right, my number 10 is the most pretentious film on the list. It's the fun-fueled family story about a man in an opium den having a four-hour nightmare. And here it is.
Once upon a time, in the soul of a boy, once upon a time, in the life of a man, once upon a time, in the history of a nation, once upon a time, in America.
So my number 10 is Once Upon a Time in America, Sergio Leone's last film.
Never say never.
Wait, do you guys have a plan to bring him back from the dead?
Oh, he's dead?
Yeah.
He's fucking dead?
This embolism popped in his brain and he fell flat in the pool. This movie, the reason it's so low for me, I do think it is a masterful achievement from Leone, but this is the difference between a film like this and a film like The Irishman, which I really enjoy. The Irishman keeps me very much accelerated with its pace and allows itself to breathe. This movie has nothing but breathing. And there are several different cuts of this movie. I've only ever watched the 229 cut. I was thankfully able to find the longer cut that has now been since out of print because Fox distributed it. It is a very interesting film to do in terms of Sergio Leone, more known for these Westerns, to kind of watch him do this poetic gangster epic is quite an achievement. I find it in a lot of ways more interesting than something like The Godfather in places. It's not to dig The Godfather, but this one's just a little more fascinating by the way he shoots it and decisions he makes. There are a lot of elements of this film that have aged horribly. I rewatched it this week in preparation and I hadn't watched it in a minute. And yeah, there's a lot of stuff that definitely does not hold up. Just definitely should have context for the kind of films that Leone made prior to this, because it very much is also an exploitation film at a time when we're moving away from that. But I can see how a butchered down version of this film would just completely throw people off, and he wouldn't want to go at it it wouldn't make a lot of money back. So, but if you can manage to find a copy of it and check it out, it's worth your attention. You may need to watch this in chunks. It can drag on a little bit, kind of like my review of it.
I rented it at the video store when I worked there, and I started it, and I never finished it.
Another ringing endorsement by Brad. He loves our
number 10 I love films. Movies, guys.
I think Brad's impressed with our number 10 selection, Zach.
Yeah, no. It's I promise it's a lot more fun from here. So, but yeah, my number 10, Once Upon a Time in America.
Just picture me having the hardest eye rolls entering your movies into the Blu-ray for number 10. Like, oh, these guys.
Yeah.
Actually, I have to look up this trailer. One of the cool things about having an awesome year is that most of the trailers are available in an HD.
Yeah, they've remastered a lot of them. Yeah, yeah.
Unlike 83, where yeah, they're like most of them are lost
Return
of time.
Of the Jedi. Let's just stick with that one.
Yeah, yeah.
Brad. Doesn't even remember his list.
I don't. Goldfish brain. What is that? Oh, okay. Yeah, sorry, guys. We got our first sweeper, and it's from me.
Wow, early.
The kids of Elm Street don't know it yet, but something is coming to get them.
There's something out there, isn't there?
You just see cuts happen.
What did that, Lieutenant?
I don't know.
Tina!
Is the coroner got to say?
He's in the jaw and puking since he saw it.
They're gonna kill me for sure.
Did you do it?
There was somebody else there.
He was locked in a room with a girl who went in alive and came out in a rubber bag.
No one knows where it came from or who it will visit next.
Nancy? There's something wrong with you. You're imagining things.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Do you believe in the boogeyman?
No.
Whatever you do, don't fall asleep.
No! No!
She's the only one who can stop it. If she fails...
I'm your boyfriend now, Nancy.
No one will survive. Wes Craven, director of The Hills Have Eyes and Last House on the Left, a new masterpiece in fantasy terror, Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, my number 9 is A Nightmare on Elm Street.
You unimaginable bastard.
Why? Why can't I have it at 9?
That's fine.
Is it because yours is higher somewhere?
Maybe.
Yeah, I swept somebody with that one.
Both of us, you son of a bitch. And probably Carol. When I get to her list, I bet Nightmare on Elm Street's on there.
You know, Freddy's a cool character and all, but and there's like great effects in this movie. Cool imagery. Genuinely like freaky, but I'm never really scared watching it. And there are some really silly parts that are just like, meh. I'd rather watch Jason slash people.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, but I'll talk about it later. It's an important movie.
I mean, yeah, it's definitely like in the history of cinema, super important, but also like on my list. Like, come on, give me a break. It's in the 10, guys. In 1984, I mean, there's like 30 movies that could have taken that spot.
Her mom is a great actress in this film.
Ronnie Blakely, yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. She's awful.
Oh, I like her in the movie. She's good.
Oh, no, it's bad.
Oh.
And
we killed him, honey.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I said it off mic. Like, yeah, she just has like unopened bottles of liquor hidden throughout the house. When Nancy finds the glove in the kitchen drawer, like, how did she know it was there? It's just there. There's a part where Saxon comes to the house and walks up the stairs, and it goes to a whole other Home Alone scene where Nancy spends like 5 minutes booby trapping the whole house with like industrial grade everything, and then he gets to the top of the stairs. The editing a little shaky, but it's still like a cool movie, and it's really important to horror and 1984 in general. So
yep,
great. You guys will talk better about it than I will.
My number 9 is from director Walter Hill, and it's another film I discovered through Shout Factory.
I'll be coming for her, and I'll be coming for you too.
Sure you will, and I'll be waiting.
You are about to enter a world unlike any you've ever seen before, where rock and roll is king, the only law is a loaded gun, where the beautiful
stay and see the show, it's really good,
the brutal
I want Tom Cody,
and the brave all meet.
From now on, it's for real
in Streets of Fire. Now, from the creators of 48 Hours, Universal Pictures presents Michael Paré, Diane Lane, Rick Moranis, and Amy Madigan in a Walter Hill film, Streets of Fire.
My number nine is Streets of Fire, which stars Diane Lane as a really famous rock and roll singer, and she gets kidnapped, and the only one that can save her is her ex-boyfriend, and he's hired to save her.
Because he wouldn't do it on his own?
Nah, bro. He needs the money.
He needs the money.
But no, it's a really fun movie. I know Brad hates this one, too. But
I don't hate it. I just think it's goofy.
It is goofy, but it's very 80s. And it's just as you can tell, listening to the trailer, like the music in it's really good. Diane Lane is awesome in it. Willem Dafoe is great as the bad guy.
It's poorly dubbed. I'm not even sure that's Michael Paré's voice in that trailer.
And just, yeah, I just had fun watching it. The Blu-ray, if you get it, has a 2-hour making of that's really great too. So
real-time making of documentary.
It's like a 4-hour Rob Zombie documentaries for like Halloween.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
The movie does feel like it's 4 hours long.
It's the Once Upon a Time in America of Walter Hill's career.
No, it does not feel. It's like 90 minutes. It goes by fast.
All I do is run away from the town and come back.
It's his Mad Max.
Yeah.
Don't listen to Brad. He doesn't know what he's talking about. His movie's awesome.
Yeah, I only knew about this movie because Mr. Klug took a song from it to use in the Comedy of Errors when we did it at school for the play. I was like, oh, I bet this movie's awesome. Cut to like 15 years later.
Why?
What's this movie about? I don't get it.
It's about young love and rock and roll, Brad. Weren't you listening to the fucking trailer?
And violence.
It sounded like a Rocky Horror Picture knockoff.
No, oh, you just son of a bitch.
I mean, I don't know. Rocky Horror Picture Show is great, but it could have used a lot more talking heads
suits. Is it great? Is it great?
I meant musically.
Zach, number nine.
All right. My number nine, it all gets more fun from here. My number nine is the closest that any film explosion here will get to Jack Benny. And here it is.
Oh, God.
I still watch over people.
You devil.
I love to scare the hell out of people.
That old black magic has me in its spell. That old black magic that I weave so well.
I'd sell my soul to the devil to make it in this business.
Interesting. When a rock and roll singer sold his soul to become a star.
This is fun!
Guess who answered his prayers?
Who are you?
Oh my God.
Guess again.
Oh God. You devil.
I can make things happen. I'm running the big operation. It's fun, but I'm pooped.
I hate it when he does that.
It's me, Bobby God.
Oh, nuts.
You look like the devil. He's always wanted to look like me. But I'm God.
People think because I'm the devil, I'm insensitive.
What happens when my contract is up?
It's the little things I enjoy.
You have to let me out of this deal.
No. I want the kid back. You can have him back if you win.
Oh, God. You devil.
Not good, huh? Not bad.
George Burns and George Burns in Oh, God, You Devil.
It'll be fabulous.
So, yeah, my number nine is Oh, God, You Devil. The Benny connection is that George Burns and Jack Benny were super great friends, and one of the executive producers on this is Irving Fine, who was Jack's manager before passing and then went over to George. This is one of the last films I feel like where George enjoyed himself, seemingly, because first of all, it is an extension off of the off of Carl Reiner's Oh God, and Oh God Book Two is it's whatever. This one's a little bit more fun. Burns gets to play the devil alongside of God as well, and it's a lot of fun to just kind of watch him play around with, you know, like family friendly or like audience everywhere devil humor. This movie does not go for anything like like later, like Ghostbusters comparatively has more sex jokes than Oh God, You Devil. But the basic plot is a musician sells his soul to the devil, and the devil picks it up on his supercomputer because he already owns Muammar Gaddafi and Idi Amin, clearly. And he goes, he finds him and he tracks him down and he signs him to a contract. But the thing that you learn is that God watched over him in the 60s when this kid was, you know, going to die. So it's going to be between them to see who gets his soul. It's interesting to watch him in this film because I feel like it's the last he enjoys himself, because I never really knew about this until the last year or so, but apparently Irving Fine, his manager and who was Jack's manager, ended up dictating a lot more of George's activity in the last 10 to 15 years of his life. And apparently if Irving didn't want to go somewhere, then George wouldn't be in the movie. One of the films that George was offered and had to turn down because Irving wouldn't go for it was Grumpy Old Men. He was going to be the Burgess Meredith character. So it's sort of sad near the end in some places, but George loved performing. He would have never wanted to been, he would have had to been dragged off stage. So as much as that's sad, the man clearly wanted to keep performing until the moment he died. And this is another example of that dedication to getting up on the stage and doing what he wanted to do. And he's a lot of fun in the movie. The movie's like a cute enough comedy, but it's watching him that's really the reason you're going to sit down with this film. So, yeah, my number 9, Oh God, You Devil. A lot of fun.
Brad, number 8.
Someone must have fed me after midnight because you're getting another sweeper.
Steven Spielberg presents Gremlins. Billy Pelser has a nice home.
Billy, is that you?
Yeah, Mom, it's me.
A nice job. A nice girl.
If you're not doing anything this Thursday night, maybe you'd like to go out on a date with me?
I'd love to.
And loving parents who were about to give him...
You're going
to
like this. No, don't shake it. We're going to have to open it now. Won't wait till Christmas.
The most unusual gift he ever got.
What is it?
No.
It's your new pet.
Come on, Barney, be a good dog. My dad gave it to me.
But there are a few things to keep in mind. If you expose it to the light, you may hurt it. If you get it wet, it will multiply.
All that from water? They got wet?
Yeah, plain water.
And most important, no matter how much they beg, never, never let them eat after midnight. Because when they do, they change. They become clever. Mischievous.
What's going on here?
And dangerous.
Gremlins, eh? Little monsters.
Right.
Hundreds of them.
Well, I don't know, maybe thousands.
They've been here too. Billy, what are these things? Where do they come from?
Look, I know it sounds crazy, I know. But in a few hours, you're gonna have a major disaster on your hands.
Gremlins, directed by Joe Dante. They'll be expecting you.
So yeah, my number 8 is Gremlins, a fun little monster movie.
Agreed.
Yeah, great creature effects. Kind of a disturbing little story, especially in the middle with Phoebe Cates' character. It's almost like, oh, this silly little monster movie has like this serious, dramatic pause in the middle. Like a Christmas horror movie. Should be more in the conversation with Die Hard as a fun holiday alternatives.
I think it is.
Yeah.
I think it is. It's just Die Hard's the funnest go-to example, I guess, comparatively.
Yeah, you only swept me by one, so it's my number 7. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely something, my wife loves this movie. We watch it every year for Christmas. And yeah, it's like the creature effects are awesome.
Yeah, growing up, I always loved Gizmo. It was adorable.
Yeah. I always loved when he was in the Barbie Corvette, you know?
Yeah.
Is this the one where he also like puts the Rambo headband, or is that two?
I think that's two.
No, I think he puts on this one, doesn't he?
I'm trying to remember. It's been a minute.
Yeah, I guess it would have to be, because 85 was when Rambo had the headband, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then like the takes place in the same town as Back to the Future.
It sure does. It's all connected, my friend.
It's all connected. Marty was back in time when this happened, so he didn't get to experience it. But yeah, Gremlins is a fun family film.
It's, yeah, I mean, my kid loves it. He's nine.
Yeah.
It's your kids, Marty. They fed the Mogwai after midnight.
Like, this one is definitely, like, freakier and scarier than 2. Like, 2 is just, like, a straight-up comedy.
2's a fucking Looney Tune cartoon.
Yeah. But yeah, as a kid, it was a little terrifying as a kid. But
yeah, yeah, I don't disagree.
Especially, yeah, when they're falling gremlins.
You're supposed to root for Stripe, right?
So, yeah, my number 8, Gremlins.
My number 8 is a coming-of-age tale that you learn from a wise old man.
This is it. This is the end of the line.
Telling me.
Did I tell you about the pool here?
For Daniel LaRusso.
Is this the only pool you guys got?
The future seemed far from terrific.
This place is a dump. You should go back to New Jersey.
Hey, I know it's hard, but we're not quitters, are we?
Until he met the right girl.
She's beautiful. I say she's beautiful. I think she's beautiful. Is that your address?
You got it.
But that only angered the wrong guy.
You know, Oak's Country Club at 9:30.
Definitely.
You gotta be nuts.
And his troubles really began.
Dad, push it. Life can pay.
Then, in one man, he found a teacher.
I promise teach karate.
And a friend.
Fighting always last answer.
How did you do that?
Don't know. First time. Power. Whole body. Make a perfect picture.
But how do I know if my picture's the right one?
If come from inside you, always right one. Lesson about the balance, not just karate, a lesson for all life. White train.
So I won't have to fight.
Hey, Karate Kid, let's make a move.
You know, points or no points, you're dead meat.
I don't have much of a cheering section.
You got me?
In the end, it will be in Daniel's hands. In his body. Most of all, in his mind.
Concentrate, focus, power. Remember, balance.
No mercy. Columbia Pictures presents The Karate Kid.
Hey, what kind of belt do you have?
Canvas. You like? J.C. Penney, 398.
My number 8 is The Karate Kid, and I swept somebody.
Get him a body bag, Ryan. Yeah.
I recently rewatched this, and I was reminded of how much I love this movie and how much I enjoyed it as a kid. My brothers and I watched it all the time, and it's just a really fun movie. It's one of those coming of age movies I really like, because it's I love 80s movies, so it has a nice 80s aesthetic to it. It has a killer soundtrack.
Would you imagine your wedding to Elizabeth Shue being like?
Oh my gosh, dude. I said it while the trailer is playing, but I love Elizabeth. I had the biggest crush on her. From this movie, and then if you listen to Filmsplosion 1986, I also talk about Adventures in Babysitting. I always wanted her to be my babysitter because she's smoking hot. And even as she's gotten older, man, she's still a smoke show. I still love my wife, but I'm just saying, Elizabeth Shue, if she wanted to go to Kokomo and as a bartender, I'm just saying I'd go.
Way down to Kokomo?
Yeah.
Aruba, Jamaica.
Anybody cocktail fans here?
Just a song.
I think the performances are great in it. Ralph Macchio is awesome in this film, because you believe in. Actually, when I was watching it again, I really fell in love with his mom too, because you're never really told why they moved to California. but you realize that she's doing what's best for her and her family, and she's a single mom, and she works her ass off, and she's supportive. Mm-hmm. She's a great character in this movie. This movie's great.
William Zabka too, man. Like, I know he's the villain, but if he clearly has some dad issues, and I've not watched Cobra Kai yet, but I'm assuming some of that's explored. So,
I mean, it's generally explored, like just masculinity in general. But I'm trying to think. Like, I think they do address, like, it's like an offhanded comment. They do say like why they moved out of New Jersey at some point, but
yeah.
Off the top of my head, I think it's, like he left.
Yeah.
But I think maybe in 2 or 3, they specifically say, like,
I can't remember. And I literally just watched 2 and 3 as well.
Yeah.
Obviously, Karate Kid Part 1 stays with you forever. Uh-huh. 2 and 3 are okay. 2's actually pretty good. 3.
Yeah, I was going to say 3 is like.
Yeah.
Pat Morita, though, it shouldn't go unsaid. Like, this got him an Oscar nomination. Yeah, and to that point, it was what? Happy Days?
Yeah,
like,
it should have. He's awesome in the movie. Yeah.
His performance sticks with you so much that it you couldn't imagine that Jackie Chan would be able to match it in that 2010 film, but he ends up being the best part of that movie at all, period. They both show the range that they need to when they're, you know, drinking and lamenting. Like, yeah, it's a good film.
Yeah, good stuff. Brad, number 7.
All right, my number 7. Come with me if you want to see me sweep another one.
Are you fucking kidding me?
In the 21st century, a weapon will be invented like no other. This weapon will be powerful, versatile, and indestructible. It can't be reasoned with. It can't be bargained with. It will feel no pity, no remorse. No pain, no fear. It will have only one purpose: to return to the present and prevent the future. This weapon will be called the Terminator.
You're dead, honey.
What day is it? The date?
12th May, Thursday.
What year? I'm here to help you. I'm Reese, DN38416, assigned to protect you. You've been targeted for termination.
Why does it want me? Why me?
Arnold Schwarzenegger is the Terminator. Your future is in its hands.
Possible responses for Brad putting it that low. Cool. No. Fuck you, asshole. Boop, 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 boop. Fuck you, asshole.
My number 7 is The Terminator, which, you know, it's only this low, I guess, because 2 is so much more awesome than this is. You're all agreeing with me. Maybe Cameron should remake all of his movies so he'll get it right the second time around.
Oh, shit. I mean, Avatar?
I mean, Avatar Way of Water is better than Avatar.
Is it?
Yes, it is.
I haven't seen the original.
It's more interesting.
I'll assume it is. The Terminator, it's also like the second one is more of an action film with like better writing, better effects. And this one is kind of just like a slasher movie. It's very simple, very elemental.
That's why it's fucking cool.
It's cool. It's on the list. Fuck. that's about it. Like, you know. I don't remember the dialogue being that great in this one, and like that's not surprising for Cameron, but just 2 is so much better. Like, I would just rather watch 2 all the time, you know. It's just like the first one, but he had more time to write it.
I mean, in a weird way, you could more time only to work it watch out. 2 and be fine.
Yeah, like, I get it. Yeah.
Yeah.
takes all the best stuff from the first one and just makes it better. So, but yeah, this one's like definitely less fun, just more serious, darker, scarier. Like, and it's like a Friday the 13th movie. There's a slasher just chasing these people throughout the whole thing. So yeah, it's very simple. My number seven, The Terminator.
My number seven is also a repeat. It's Gremlins. I mentioned that we watch it every year. My wife adores this movie. It's a fun movie. It could not be on my list. I'm not as enamored with it as my wife is, but I have a lot of fun with it. And I think the best way to sum up Gremlins is it's a fun movie. And you know, I mean, it's scary, but it's not too scary. My kid loves it too, and he's nine. So I think it's a good entry level kind of horror movie where it's still pretty horrific, but, you know, the scares are always, I guess, tamed by the old lady flying out of the window.
Yeah. You took your kid to see Evil Dead Rise, right?
No.
Or just the trailer.
Yeah, no, I took him to see Megan. Because I asked Brad, hey, is Megan scary? He says, no, it's like cute Chucky. Oh, Kellen can see that. And so before, though, it had the red band trailer for Evil Dead Rise. And I'll never forget when the end of the trailer where she says, where's my mommy? Your mommy's with the maggots now. And my kid's eyes were as big as fucking anime eyes. Oh my God, I might be the worst dad ever.
So then he watches this and he's just like, meh.
Yeah, he's like, meh. I literally saw a woman say mom's with the maggots. So
is anybody with the maggots here in this one?
Zach, number seven.
All right. My number seven and my number six are ones that could have interchanged a little bit placement-wise, but this is where it ended up during my mood that day. My number seven features everybody's favorite felt puppets.
New York. Times Square. Broadway. All the lights. All the spectacle. All the excitement. Thousands come every day dreaming of one thing, to make it to the top. Out of these thousands, one has a very special dream. And he's got something unique, something ordinary people don't have. And together with his friends, he's gonna take this town by storm.
Taxi? Taxi?
The Muppets Take Manhattan. Coming soon from TriStar.
Muppets Take Manhattan. I'm a Muppet fan. This one's not my favorite of the earlier entries and whatnot, but it's still a fun time. It's about them trying to become big Broadway stars and whatnot. My standout scene from this film probably has to be where Miss Piggy is working in a department store with a coworker, and they just keep wasting the product and pissing off the manager. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's great to watch the Muppets at play, and I'm always down for pretty much any adventure they've done. Like I'm kind of like there for even the worst of it. Like Muppets in Space, I'll still watch.
So. Yeah, I watched Muppet Treasure Island a couple nights ago.
Mm-hmm, yeah,
that one's all right.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I know that James is going like, it's brilliant. But yeah.
Why are there so many songs about rainbows?
And what's on the other side? But yeah. And it's a Frank Oz film. So he clearly knows how to work these puppets and have fun with directing them. So I'd like to rewatch it with my girlfriend because she didn't grow up with Muppets. So she doesn't know how magical they can be.
I love Steve Martin in this movie. Mm-hmm. As the waiter. Excellent
no,
choice.
That, no, that's Muppet. The Muppet
Am I
movie.
Mixing him up?
Yeah, that's the Muppet movie. Yeah.
Oh, man.
I always get this Caper and the Muppet movie. Just like I can't differentiate.
Caper's the best of all of them. Muppet movie second. This one probably third.
They played one of them at the Midnight at the Esquire years ago. That was like the last time I watched one of these.
Fuck. Let me know if they're going to do it before that theater gets closed down by a bunch of assholes.
No.
No, but Candace Bergen's in this one too, and that's kind of sweet because her father, without her father's ventriloquism work, Jim Henson wouldn't have had a lot of spark of inspiration to do what he did in the Muppet world. So yes, Yeah, my number 7, Muppets Take Manhattan.
Oh, was it my turn?
Yep.
I thought you were going to introduce me.
No, it's Brad, number 6.
My number 6, Ryan, hole up in this cabin with me because we're going to fight Jason together.
Oh, fuck yes.
Before you have felt the terror, known the madness, lived the horror. But this is the one you've been screaming for. Friday the 13th, the final chapter. Jason is back. He moves like a shadow, dark and silent.
Sorry, you change your mind?
He never utters a word. He doesn't even seem to breathe.
Where the hell is the corkscrew?
He simply, mindlessly, mercilessly, kills. But now, Jason's reign of terror is over. Friday the 13th, the final chapter. Friday, April 13th, is Jason's unlucky day.
So my number 6 is Friday the 13th, the final chapter,
my
as
number
is
six
Ryan's.
Too. Heck yeah.
Yeah, we're no dead fucks.
No. That is definitely a dead fuck thing to say, though. No, I tell everybody, if you want, I think, the ultimate Jason movie, it might be this one.
Yeah, I think it boils down all the elements of what you like about a Friday the 13th movie into the best possible amalgamation
in
this one.
And it gives them a formidable adversary.
Tommy. What am I? Favorite shots in any Friday the 13th, it's in the trailer, is when Jason like busts through the door, because they use that low angle to give him more of an imposing thing, and it's just so well done.
Yeah, you get Jason with the mask, which is a thing I was disappointed in the first two movies. And then he's like a strong threat. It takes place at a lake in a cabin still, and then has this added element of there's a kid who's a little disturbed, because like what what's his face in 3? Like, he messes with masks and stuff too. But, like, Tommy gets.
Is that Arnie?
Yeah, Arnie. But, yeah, Tommy has, like, a little bit of, like, a, you know, demented child element to him. And he actually figures into, you know, he's at to, like, fight Jason, whereas, you know, Arnie just dies.
I think of all the special effects makeup Tom Savini ever did for this franchise, my favorite has to be where they were able to get Jason sliding down the machete.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome. That's fucking amazing.
Yeah, a lot of the effects are, like, creative and cool in this one, like, and different. And even the kids, like, have more going on, I think, than the other ones.
Oh, yeah.
Like, George McFly there, what's his name?
Crispin Glover.
Yeah.
Crispin Glover.
Yeah, he starts off as, like, wondering why he's dumped, and then they meet the twins, which is interesting. It's just, I think it's a really fun movie, but I also think Jason's scary in it. You know, he's unrelenting, which, if I had to pick, you know, my favorite Friday the 13th, I always lean towards the ones where Jason is kind of unrelenting in them, because the rest of stuff is fine. But yeah, you're right. I mean, I think all the teenagers have a cool story. You like them all. I don't think there's anyone in the movie where you don't like them.
Maybe the guy watching the stag film. I found him a little intolerable.
Yeah, but Teddy, he's Teddy Bear. You know,
he's not horrible, but he is annoying.
he is, but he gets his comeuppance.
Of course he does.
In the form of a knife in the back of the skull. It's one of my favorite Friday the 13th. And if this wasn't such a strong year of movies, it would definitely be a lot higher on my list.
Oh, for sure, yeah. It's like all the best elements of Friday the 13th, I think.
Yeah.
All congeal in this like single movie. Because, yeah, next one's 5, and it's just like...
Oh, my God.
Yeah, complete departure.
This one's like an Oscar winner compared to 5.
and then the rest of them just get supernatural after that because they're like, oh, we got to bring this kid back.
Yeah. But that does lead to Jason Lives, which is a great.
Oh, yeah. Jason Lives is my favorite Friday the 13th. Zach, we're doing your number six now.
My number six is a repeat, which is Gremlins. You guys have pontificated on it pretty brilliantly. I'll also point out the whole do you hear what I hear sequence.
Oh, yeah.
It's very well put together horror sequence. I like Joe Dante's work, so this is a lot of fun. I actually tend to enjoy Gremlins 2 a lot more, but just because I appreciate cartoony goofiness. But this is definitely, like, has tons of innovation going on for it from the makeup effects and the, you know, like the creatures and whatnot on down to just the way it's able to. I actually think that the blending of the, you know, the heavier story elements amid this fanciful, like, wacky monsters from hell scenario works a little bit better than most other films that try to do this. I think it's got a good heart on its sleeve. So yeah, my number six, Gremlins. A lot of fun.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
Brad, number five.
Oh, we're back to me already? Yeah. My first repeat is The Karate Kid. Awesome movie. Definitely, as an Italian kid from New Jersey, I related to it a lot. Ryan talked a lot about it before already, but yeah, it's one of my favorite things. The third one is obviously my favorite.
Oh, of course.
That shit.
Of course.
But this kicked everything off. You know, the Cobra Kai series draws heavily from, obviously, this. And then Mr. Miyagi's, like, performance and his side story, which they don't seem to remember a whole lot of. But, yeah, that's like an emotional gut punch. We find out, like, you know, what his backstory is and everything. And
That whole scene of Daniel and him where he's drunk in his home is fucking beautiful.
Reads his story and everything. Yeah. And Mr. Miyagi just has, like, a lot of great lessons. And he presents them in, like, really fun ways that, you know, a lot of stuff would really help if people followed them today.
Yeah, I agree.
And it's weird though, like, I do kind of, you know, as growing up, you know, I was just on
Daniel's side
throughout the movie, but now that I'm older and I kind of see, like, you know, Daniel's a little bit of a bully himself at times, it could have been over at some point, but he kind of egged him on. But the whole Cobra Kai franchise was such a mess anyway, they deserve to go down. So the series kind of finds balance in all that, which is great. So my number five, The Karate Kid.
My number five is a blockbuster favorite and features really great rock and roll music. Sue. She knows just what to do. Got a girl named Sue. She knows just what to do.
Look, I'm not the first guy who fell in love with a girl he met in a restaurant who then turned out to be the daughter of a kidnapped scientist, only to lose her to a childhood lover who she'd last seen on a deserted island and who turned out 15 years later to be the leader of the French underground.
I know. It all sounds like some bad movie.
Got a girl named Daisy. She almost drives me crazy. She almost drives me crazy. She rocked me to the east, she rocked me to the west, but she's the girl that I love best. So tutti frutti, oh Rudy. 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 A wop bop a loo bam a lop bam boo.
My number five is one of my most favorite spoof movies that they don't make anymore. It's Top Secret, starring Val Kilmer as a rock and roll icon, kind of like an Elvis style guy mixed with the Beach Boys. And it's a Zucker movie, so it's really silly. And the only way these movies work, besides all the visual stuff, is if people treat the dialogue that it's 100%, like, real. And They do. And that's the only way these movies work, because they're so absurd. You know, I used to rent it all the time at Blockbuster, and it has, you know, wonderful moments where he's meeting all the people from the French Resistance, and one of the guys, his name's Deja Vu. And so he says, "Have we met before?" And Val Kilmer says, "I don't think so." And then the guy turns his head away, then turns really quick back at him. It's so stupid, but it's so brilliant. And there's even like a great underwater fight scene where Val Kilmer is underwater. Has to be for like a minute straight, or they're fighting in a bar. And yeah, the movie's stupid, but it's really funny and super entertaining. And everybody should watch it. Yep. Number five, Zach.
All right. Well, y'all have been mean to me already, or at least Brad has.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that this hurts him as much as he hurt me.
Ghosts.
Hello, Ghostbusters.
They're real.
You do? You have?
They're here.
We got one!
Ghostbusters.
Hey, anybody see a ghost?
They catch the ghost that won't stay dead. Ghostbusters! They're armed. They're dangerous.
Try to imagine all life as you know it stopping instantaneously and every molecule in your body exploding at the speed of light.
Right, that's bad. Okay, all right, important safety tip. Thanks, Egon.
They're professionals.
Oh, I'm the chairman of the largest paranormal removal company in America.
You see it?
They're all that stand between you and the end of the world.
The city is headed for a disaster of biblical proportion.
Real wrath of God type stuff.
Zach.
Fire and brimstone coming down from the sky.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria.
Your girlfriend lives in the corner penthouse of Spook Central.
You want this body?
Is this a trick question?
Got your stick?
Ghostbusters, starring Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Sigourney Weaver, Harold Ramis, Rick Moranis, coming to save the world. Ghostbusters.
We came, we saw, we kicked it.
So yeah, my number five is Ghostbusters.
Ooh, Zach, you're awful. You're the worst one of us.
It's my number four.
All right, cool. Yeah. So I'm not that much of a jerk.
So tired of you sweeping everybody, Zach.
The closer I get to my 40s, the closer I become to James. And my outrage increases. Now, yeah, I love Ghostbusters. I think my parents tried to show me this movie when I was in like 8 or 9, and Slimer freaked me the fuck out. But I ended up finally watching it all the way through years later and adored it. And around the time that I watched it in full was also a time where I was starting to become an SNL fan, or at least a certain era of SNL fan. And I still think it slaps hard. I think it's hard in some ways to enjoy Ghostbusters because people on the internet take this shit too fucking seriously, and it's disgusting. These are fucking comedy movies, and I just never thought that there were...
Oh, so a comedy movie can't be cinema, Scorsese-style cinema, because it's a comedy?
This is cinema. Everything's cinema, dude. Marty's creating tribes, and it's scary, and he shouldn't do that. But yeah, no, I wish that people could remember that these are fucking comedies, first and foremost. They were designed by comedians.
What are you talking about? What's people pissed about on the internet?
Oh, they were upset with the fact that women were Ghostbusters at one point for some reason. They got very angry about it and were very vitriolic. So that's why we got Afterlife, which is a fun movie too. I like all the Ghostbusters things that have come out that I've seen. I still haven't seen Frozen Empire yet. But so yeah, sometimes it takes the fun out of it, going like, ah, man, there's so many toxic people that have ripped the enjoyment of this to shreds in places, but they can't take away the joy of watching them and enjoying them, period. But yeah, it's great. And I think that it's incredibly well directed for a comedy that is intertwining a genre. It's probably one of the top standards for if you're going to make a genre comedy of that nature, you need to hit the balance points that this film hits. It's scary as well as hilarious. The opening sequence is still fucking unnerving. Like, you don't know what's going on. It works well with its practical effects to achieve that. So yeah, it's a fun time. Who are you going to call when you need a good movie? Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Boo.
Yeah, you still suck.
Yeah, I know.
Brad, number four.
Gosh, my number four. Do I have it in me for another sweeper? This one's going to rip your heart out.
If adventure has a name, it must be Indiana Jones. From Steven Spielberg and George Lucas. Indiana Jones. And the Temple of Doom.
You don't believe me. You will, Dr. Jones.
Yeah, there's my number four, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. Really tough for me with my number three.
I'm sure it was.
It flip-flopped a lot. When I was a kid, this movie was so influential. Like, I created stuff a lot based on this specific Indiana Jones movie. As I've gotten older, obviously, three has become my favorite. But yeah, this one was so twisted as a like 8 or 9 year old. just like blew my imagination. You know, today it's regarded as like this dark, odd aberration in the Indiana Jones early franchise. but when I grew up with it, I didn't know the difference at all. There's just another cool Indiana Jones adventure where someone got their heart ripped out.
Walk in the park.
Just a walk in the park. But yeah, now I know like all the now I know all the behind the scenes stuff with George Lucas and Steven Spielberg. Kind of airing their, what they're going through personally.
Hey, you tear our hearts out, we'll tear yours out.
Yeah, putting it into this dark, twisted movie, which is awesome.
Let it be a lesson to you. Don't divorce us.
Yeah. Temple of Doom. Awesome.
I'll talk about it later in its rightful spot. Number four for me is Ghostbusters. This movie is great. It's always been a favorite of mine. Showing it to my kid, who's become a huge Ghostbusters fan, is always awesome. And just if this is when I love Bill Murray, as Bill Murray's gotten later in his career, it doesn't seem like he wants to be in movies. In this, though, he has such a command on screen and is so funny and just he's easy to root for, even though he's kind of a scoundrel in the film. But yeah, it's just between the mixture of comedy and horror, just a great balance. And when I was young, I used to love the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man. I still love him to this day. I have little action figures of him. And yeah, it's just it's one of those films. Like a lot of my top five films are films that have played, like Brad talked about with Temple of Doom, have played a really big part in me growing up, and ones that I would rent or when I was able to purchase, and I watch pretty regularly. And Ghostbusters is definitely one of them. And my kid loving Ghostbusters has rekindled my love for Ghostbusters. And just a really fun movie to sit down and watch. And Zach, number four for you.
All right. My number four involves voyages of some kind on a ship of some sort. I don't fucking know. I'd play the trailer.
All that they've loved, all that they've fought for, all that they've stood for will now be put to the test. Star Trek III, The Search for Spock.
The word, sir?
The word? Is no. I am therefore going anyway.
You do this, you'll never sit in the captain's chair again.
Engage auto systems. Clear all moorings.
Cleared, sir.
1/4 impulse power.
Someone is stealing the Enterprise.
Warp speed.
Klingon bird of bracer. She's arming torpedoes.
Shields up.
The shield's non-responsive.
Fuck!
We're a sitting duck.
Join us on this, the final voyage of the Starship Enterprise. Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. The adventure continues.
Hey, my number three is Search for Spock, Zach.
Right on, tag team review.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Live long and prosper, my friend. This is not Wrath of Khan, but it's a lot of good. It's a lot of fun. I think it's also wonderful to watch Leonard Nimoy take command of the ship, so to speak, in his directorial debut. I think he directs a hell of a action picture. I think that if I had like a critique of it and whatnot, I think that there's some slight balance issues between what's going on the Genesis planet compared to what's going on the ship. But it's got a couple different storylines going on, so some are more interesting than others. Like, frankly, what's going on in the Genesis planet, I would trim down a little bit more of and, like, kind of keep Spock in a little bit less. Like, let's not be so quick to show young Spock. Let's actually focus on some of the other people and why they would want to go on this journey that will get them all stripped of their commission. Commander Krug, played by Christopher Lloyd, is absolutely fantastic as a Klingon villain for the Enterprise to go up against. And I think that as long as I'll live, even though Wrath of Khan will make me cry harder, I think the second biggest cry that I get out of Star Trek has to be when Spock is returned and he just goes, "Jim, your name is Jim." And then they all hug each other at the end. And I'm like, it was worth it. It was worth them getting stripped out of Starfleet.
Real tearjerker, that part.
You shut your bitch mouth.
You know what? You know what, boy?
Boy.
Boy. Yeah, I'm Leonard McCoy. Yeah, boy. it's great. Star Trek 3 is awesome. Ryan doesn't know what he's talking about. Brad, why do you like a great Star Trek movie?
Okay, maybe Temple of Doom should have been above this.
Yeah,
but
probably.
Me out. I'm a huge Star Trek fan, and as a kid when I watched this, I didn't rank the films. This was just part two of a really awesome trilogy. I think it is fun. It's good to see a movie where the characters are just kind of having like an extended version of an episode. The stakes aren't huge. It's kind of like just like we did a thing in the last one and we kind of want to undo it so we can keep making these movies. And I'm fine with it. So that's kind of more why it's in, you know, my three spot. Is easily could have been four, but you know,
I love also there's an impetus, like in terms of characterization, like each character does get their moment to shine. It's not just McCoy and Shatner centric. I think Leonard Nimoy knew how to give appropriate balance to each storyline, regardless of what you would prefer out of like every section.
That's true. Like with Nimoy at the helm, like because it goes on to do four next, mm-hmm. and that one, everyone kind of gets a cool thing to do.
Yeah.
Whereas even in the TV show, like they really don't have a lot of screen time or like relevant parts.
Yeah. I also love that the impetus of the prime motivator of this story is Leonard McCoy having to carry this burden and go like, that green son of a bitch, he finally did it.
I know, like, what a great, like, device to have the person you kind of hates the most entirely attached to him. Yeah.
It's tragic, but also hilarious. Star Trek 3 is awesome.
And I think of the first time seeing the Enterprise blowing up, you know, I love the design of that ship. And then to have it come back around in 4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I just remember being young and being like, what's the new ship going to look like? And then, yeah.
You played it for your first sweeper, but when the Klingon ship basically explodes and Krug realizing what's going on, he goes, get out of the way!
Yeah, like, Kirk has, like, a great one-up moments in it, too. And also, like, you know, at the same time I was discovering these, I was watching Taxi reruns, so I was, like, a Back to the Future fan and, like, oh, there's the guy from Taxi.
I think you're just a big Christopher Lloyd fan. That's really what it is. It's not about Star Trek. It's not about Back to the Future. You just like Christopher Lloyd.
That's the connecting thread.
The only reason you've watched One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest is just for his many minutes on screen.
Couple minutes.
Yeah. Many couple of minutes.
Oh, man. Are you guys not talking about it? Your discussion is as boring as Star Trek 3.
Listen to that, George. He doesn't like the cool stuff.
This is a Star Trek podcast now. You can leave.
I mean, talk about a letdown from one of the greatest movies ever to that one.
It's not as bad as The Matrix.
Yeah. Well, I'm a Matrix defender.
Just kidding. So I don't know where we're at. What number? Which one was that?
That was my 3.
And that was my 4. So now it's your...
So no, so it's 3. Zach's 4, Brad's 3. So then now it's my number 3. Now my number 3?
Yeah.
Fucking finally, Jesus. My number 3 is a repeat. Actually, I really like The Search for Spock. I just want to give you guys shit. My number 3 is a repeat. It's A Nightmare on Elm Street. There's a big theme you'll see in my last 3 films that Brad has put these really low on his list and swept me the rest of the way out. Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. You think Search for Spock is a snooze fest and your number 3 is all about sleeping.
So it's A Nightmare on Elm Street is very innovative. It is a director who is on the top of his horror game. It introduces one of the greatest horror characters of all time in Freddy Krueger.
Without that house getting built, you don't get Lord of the Rings.
It's a really cool movie. Different premise for a villain. You know, what makes it cool, what they try to explain in the later movies, which actually hurts Freddy Krueger, is they really don't explain who he is. It's just he's a child molester and killer, and he is for some reason able to kill teenagers in their dreams. They never really say how, which I'm fine with.
It makes it
cool. He's an iconic look. Robert Englund is awesome. Just a really cool movie, and it's definitely one of my favorite Halloween movies.
Oh no, you can give an answer to it. Be like, hey, no, ask me how does Freddy get to attack people in their dreams?
How does Freddy attack people in their dreams?
The magic.
There we go.
There, we're done.
Perfect. Zach, number 3.
My number 3 is a repeat. It is The Terminator. I love this movie. I understand that Terminator 2 is a better movie. I really like the horror vibe of this first one a lot. I think what I appreciate also is just watching all those early robotics. Before James Cameron got the CG bug, like watching him play around with practical stuff is a lot of fun. And this is a great example of it. The opening scenes of the future and watching him play around in a world where he doesn't have those liquidy effects is just fantastic. And Michael Biehn's fantastic as Kyle Reese. It's like, it's so weird, but I do think this film gets forgotten in the shadow of Terminator 2, but it is such a important milestone for not just visual effects, but what Cameron aspires to do. Like, it's the earliest stepping stone before he ends up doing a lot to innovate visual effects and special effects photography. And it's really cool to just watch him play around in that sandbox, because it's kind of the closest you get to like what those guys grew up with, which was in some ways like creating those robots and or doing stop motion. Like, you
It's the seed. And Schwarzenegger fucking kills it. He's a menacing force of nature that Cameron used to great effect. And it's kind of cool to watch Arnold basically go through acting school in the 80s, because these smaller steps, Conan and things like this, allow him to eventually become a little bit more of a fun comedic persona. And it's just great to just watch him be a fucking monster. So yeah, number three, Terminator. Lots of fun.
Brad, number two.
I don't think my number two is that mediocre.
Are we going to appall you with something confidential and disgusting? Let's hope so, because that is what you really like. Unconfessed crimes of buried wickedness. If that is what brings you to us, the prospect of hearing horrors, you shall not go unrewarded.
I don't believe it. The whole city is talking.
You hear it all over.
What a story.
What a scandal.
What a comedy.
What a tragedy.
Incredible.
I don't believe it.
Who can believe it?
What horrors have you heard?
Tell us.
Tell us.
Tell us at once.
Tell us about Wolfgang.
Amadeus.
Mozart.
Mozart.
Mozart?
How good is he, this Mozart?
He's remarkable.
He's an unprincipled, spoiled, conceited brat.
I'm a vulgar man. But I assure you, my music is not.
He is divinely inspired.
He is arrogant, vulgar, obscene.
He creates music for the gods.
He is passionate.
He burns with fire.
He is an angel.
He is a devil.
He claimed he'd been poisoned.
Some said he accused a man.
Some said the man was Salieri.
Salieri?
Salieri.
I don't believe it.
All the same.
Could it be possible?
Did Salieri do it after all?
Did he murder Amadeus?
Amadeus, the man, the music, the magic, the madness, the murder, the mystery, the motion picture. Amadeus, everything you've heard is true.
So yeah, my number two is Amadeus. And, you know, growing up as a German artist genius, I can relate to this story of, you know, mediocrity chasing genius and the jealousy and rivalry that it creates. And just a gorgeous looking film, brilliantly acted. It's one of those movies that I can like, oh, I'm just going to put this on in the background and then get sucked into it and be like, oh, I was supposed to work. I've just been paying attention to this movie. Last year, I got to watch it at the symphony. So they played a live symphonic track with the movie. Yeah, it's just a really awesome, you know, especially powerhouse performance from F. Murray Abraham as Salieri, telling this amazing story about this guy who's so jealous of this other guy's talent. And it's really heartbreaking. Like the last time I watched it, I was like, it's so heartbreaking that by the end, you know, he gets to work alongside Amadeus as he's killing him. And, you know, you kind of realize like, oh, if he wasn't such a prick, he probably could have studied with him, and like their talents combined probably could have solved both their problems. But no, all that ego got in the way for both of them. Like even Amadeus is kind of a villain, cause he just, cannot, you know, be appreciative of other people around him. And, is too like, yeah, up his own ass about his own music, that he can't like get steady work and stuff and fights with everybody. So, yeah, it's an amazing film, and it's definitely my number two.
It's certainly one of Milos Forman's most like striking films he ever made. I do like the film. In fact, the first time I ever watched it came because I was remembering a Family Guy joke where I think it's Peter goes like, at the end it wasn't Stewie, it was God or something. Did they do the, that bit? And I was just like, I wonder where that comes from. That's when I learned it was from Amadeus.
I'm excited because I've been reading rumblings that it might be one of Criterion's next.
Does
Warner definitely.
Brothers own that? Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
Good. Get it out of Zavzla's hands.
I think they're doing all like all Mealish Foreman stuff, so obviously that's going to make it in there. So they'll probably be one flew over the cuckoo's nest one at one point too.
And maybe a man on the moon Criterion.
Yeah. So yeah, Amadeus is awesome. I love it. It's one of those movies that I just get sucked into every time I watch it.
Nice.
And it's super long and it doesn't matter.
It's your Irishman.
And it creates great jokes for Last Action Hero.
Yes. Yeah. my number two is a repeat. It's Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
It's my number two as well.
Nice. Growing up, I always had to defend this one. I feel lately it's been getting a lot more traction of being a great adventure movie, which I always thought it was. For the longest time, it was my favorite Indiana Jones film. As I've gotten older, and I've watched the Indiana Jones movies continuously. Raiders of the Lost Ark is my favorite, but this one as a kid, I always loved. I always loved how full of danger it was. There was times when I thought Indiana Jones wasn't going to get out of the predicament he was in. I mean, but obviously a hallmark of this is it's like a serial and he'll always find a way to get out. But it also has one of my most favorite hero shots ever when he goes and saves all the kids that are trapped in the mine and the mine cart rolls up and the like it lights him up. I think it's so amazing. I think the villain in it is really scary and a bastard. And Short Round is, you know, the sidekick you always wanted. The opening is fucking brilliant with the poison.
And anything goes in Chinese.
Yeah, it just...
Or is it Mandarin, I think?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, Chinese Mandarin, yeah.
Just everything. I love everything about this movie. I think how it's shot, how it's all played. It's just, I just love it. Yeah, and it's Harrison Ford, I think, at his peak, like action star guy. You know, he looks great in it and he's funny and he makes mistakes. And I think that's why we all love Indiana Jones like we love Han Solo, as Harrison Ford makes him seem like an unbeatable hero, which he is. But also he makes mistakes and he also gets beat up, but he always gets up. That's what I like about Indiana Jones. And even if you want to say, quote unquote, the not as fun Indiana Jones movies, I still think they're great. I still have fun with them because I love the character. And that's why it's number two on my list in 1984.
Yeah. This was the first Indiana Jones movie I ever saw. And it scared the shit out of me. Because I think anybody at a young age who watches somebody's heart being pulled out of a fucking chest. I do not think my parents remembered or knew that that would happen in the movie when they showed it, because I was screaming. It stuck with me. It certainly was a lot of it was a fun movie outside of those darker moments. And then the older I got, the more I realized, oh, there's way more dark stuff going on in this thing. I understand.
Yeah, you realized child slavery is way worse than someone getting their heart ripped out and living. I did.
Well, not only that, but also the monkey brain stuff.
Yeah.
Just the attitude of this film is very, very cynical, and appropriately so. I think, yeah, out of all the inspiration films that took from this, Gunga Din's probably one of the top candidates. I understand that its portrayal of Indian culture is far from ideal, you can't... I think ultimately this film isn't trying to be mean.
No, I always push back that it's stylized.
It is very stylized. Short Round, Ki Hon Kwan is amazing in this film.
Yeah.
He holds himself up in a way that
like very few sidekick characters can ever do. Like, I'm more of a fan of Short Round than I am of Robin most days. Like, if I'm looking at sidekick characters. Look, Kate Capshaw's not the best love interest Indiana Jones ever had, but she's fine. She does perfectly fine in this movie.
She serves a purpose in the movie.
Yeah, she does scream a lot, but she is just as entertaining to watch. Like, the character of Billy needs to be that.
Well, yeah, she's the fish out of water.
Yeah.
Where it's, you know, okay, Indiana Jones is whatever. He's, mm-hmm. you know, that's what he does. And right. Short Round is with him.
Yeah.
You know, Billy, she's a lounge singer who works for the Chinese mob. I think, you know, just.
Yeah. By the way, that Busby Berkeley opening, that sticks with me. Like, that's how I've always imagined, like, if you were going to do a new Shadow movie, you need to have a scene like that, open it up or something of that nature. Like, it would be a lot of fun. But also, like, here's a fun little tidbit. As many times as I've gone to Disneyland as a kid, I've still never gone on the Indiana Jones ride.
Oh.
And part of it is because that movie affected me so much that I'm still afraid I'll fucking piss my pants.
Oh, you should see go to the Indiana Jones ride.
I know I should.
When we were there last time, my kid, that's one of his favorite rides because it's awesome.
I know, and next time I ever go, I will, but because I finally watched the VR ride, or like the people put up the YouTube videos mm-hmm. of going on the ride. But for the longest time, I wouldn't go on it. My sister would go on it because she's braver than I am. Mm. But I wouldn't because I'm like, I got freaked out by the Temple of Doom.
Well, I'll let you know a secret. It's not real. It's cool.
What? Wait, are you telling me that? Are you saying that Harrison Ford wasn't a doctor in the 40s?
Yeah, he was.
Of archaeology? He was?
Yes.
Wait. He also did space adventures with a dog,
right? Of course.
Right? Oh, good.
Of course.
So you're saying that all of my childhood fantasy movies are real?
Yes.
Okay, so they are real, so I should take them super seriously and get angry about them when people get them wrong, right?
Yes.
Okay, good.
No, it's two of the little things. One of my most favorite jokes ever in Family Guy is when they're on the talk show and Peter says, well, I guess I won't give it to you, Meg. What? The antidote to the poison you just drank. And I get immediately transported back to Indiana Jones. I go, yes, they're pulling things that I love.
Do you remember the one from Stewie Griffin, The Untold Story? Harrison talks about having been his gig as a child actor or something like that, and it just cuts to him going, whatever you do, kid, don't touch anything. Okay, Dr. Jones, I don't touch anything. And then he leans into it, Indy, and he goes, lady only here because she humping director.
You tell me to stand right here. I stand right here, Dr. Jones.
I also do love the delivery of Indy when Billy's freaking out about all the food on the banquet. He goes, you're insulting them and you're embarrassing me.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Brad, your number one film.
My number one is a repeat that Zach swept long ago. My number one is Ghostbusters.
Long ago?
And far away.
Yeah, it was like your, what, 8 or something?
It was my number 5.
Yeah, that was a while ago. Felt like an eternity ago.
It's been 84 years and I can still remember the sweep.
But yeah, you know, growing up as a young paranormal investigator, I related to Ghostbusters quite a bit. For me, like, this is the movie of 1984. I just identified this year with this movie. As a kid, I actually, like, I think my brother got the proton pack and I got the ghost popper. We had an attic in our house in Florida, and my parents let us go up there in the dark, and like we had the little thing that would shine the ghosts on the wall. Wow. And so we actually like ghost busted the ghost in our attic.
Nice.
And that was like always been like a really cool memory for me. I loved like the gadgets more than like the comedy of the movie. Like the jokes. So I always loved that stuff. And then, of course, the animated series I watched a lot, and that was a lot of fun. This new movie, I was excited when they, like, brought out the drone trap.
Yeah.
And then nothing else. I thought they were going to, like, roll out a ton of new cool tech stuff. The movie's funny. Just cool. The special effects are great. Cast is great. Just an iconic, you know, dumb idea turned into this, like, ultra cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the the big fight being this giant marshmallow thing. Just like, it's visually just iconic.
I always wanted to get covered in the marshmallow because it sounded like it'd taste really good.
Yeah. I mean, the movie, it's obviously like a giant dollop of straight shaving cream, but
yeah,
like it'd be way stickier. But yeah, it just looks like, just like a ton of fun.
Yep.
And actually, the mystery is kind of cool. Like, they tied it to this whole architectural thing.
That they've never really been able to recapture.
Yeah. Like, they have new stories of, like, ghost lore. Mm-hmm. But there's something about them where just, like, they don't feel cohesive.
Yeah.
They just feel like, oh, here's a monster. Ooh.
Yeah, it almost seems like they've gone away from busting ghosts.
Also, the puppetry and those practical ghost effects. Yeah. Like, Slimer is a inspired creation.
Yeah, those practical effects are fantastic. And also, like you said before, like, it's hard for me to also love this movie like I used to because of, you know, the segment of the fan base that just won't let anyone touch it. Like, they won't let them remake. They won't make a movie that's not the first movie again. Mm-hmm. So that's frustrating to, like, deal with because I would, you know, it has such a rich lore that you can mine and just do new things with. And that's not going to happen because if those original Ghostbusters aren't in it, man, they will riot. Even when those guys die.
It reminds me of that episode of The Simpsons where it starts off with them shoving Andy Griffith as Matlock onto a stage and all the older people are fucking like tearing his clothes off and nearly killing him. I got his pills.
Yeah, like, I think those fans would rather have them actually CGI those guys into like some weird creation and have them still be in the movies than just let him die.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Necromancy, man. They're going to get on it.
My number one is one that Brad swept really long time ago and is The Terminator. Again, growing up, one of the cool things about my dad, because I come from a divorced family.
You poor, poor thing.
Thank you. Some
soup and crackers.
Thank you.
It's okay.
Thank you. That's all I wanted to hear.
Ryan, it's not your fault. It's Ryan, not your fault.
Ryan.
Yes.
It's not your fault.
I could finally face my demons.
I wake up every day and hope to God that you're not going to be there at that door. Sorry.
My dad would let us write any movie we wanted, and I really liked Arnold Schwarzenegger. I still love Arnold Schwarzenegger. And this movie and Predator were always my favorite Schwarzenegger films. Mm. Predator slightly outguns this one because I like the monster in it.
Well, and also because if it bleeds, you can kill it.
Correct. Mm-hmm. But this one, you guys already said, yeah, it's a slasher movie. Schwarzenegger is incredible in it. Just his physical presence alone and how he commands the screen. The music is awesome. The special effects are incredible. Mm-hmm. And what I appreciate it too is it is James Cameron stripped down. And when you strip him down from all his, I want to make the most expensive movies ever with the coolest looking eye candy. Give me his action. And I'm telling you, he's one of the best directors when it comes to action. When I watched True Lies recently, there's nothing but it's like an action movie and he makes it like hum. That movie hums along just like Terminator. Yeah, it's mean, it's quick. I like it more than T2.
What?
Yeah, I said it.
That's a very fair answer.
What's wrong with you?
Nothing. I just think that T2 is a great film and there's incredible action scenes in it. I just like the Terminator to be more, you know, mean. In that one, he literally says at the end, I need a vacation after he gets his ass kicked by the T-1000.
Yeah, there's a meaner Terminator in the movie.
Yeah, but I like the cyborg. Like, I don't like liquid metal stuff. I'm more of an old school guy.
Let me explain it this way. He's a fan of old Lon Chaney Phantom of the Opera, and you're more of a fan of the 2004 Gerard Butler Phantom of the Opera.
But yeah, it's...
They really haven't made, like, the endoskeleton version. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the only time that thing is like terrifying.
Yeah,
is this movie.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, I mean, the part where it's chasing him in the factory and stuff is really cool.
Yeah.
When I was younger, I always thought it was cool when he gets his like head crushed.
Yep.
But yeah, it's a fun movie and it's awesome.
It is.
I'll take my James Cameron like that in Aliens. Yeah.
Nice.
Zach, number one?
My number one was swept a long time ago. It's A Nightmare on Elm Street. Wes Craven's Bob Shea is A Nightmare on Elm Street. So if I had to, of the three terror titans, if I had to pick the one that scared me second most, apart from Michael, it would be Freddy. And a lot of it has to do with not just the fact that it's an actor giving a performance rather than just somebody in a suit, which is not to denigrate those who play Michael or Jason, but that prosthetic on Robert Englund is allowing him to command the stage. In this first film, and one of the reasons why I would always put it at number one, is Freddie is an absolute piece of shit, and he is not playing an overt comedian. That first moment where he kind of shows off a little bit, which is, hey, Tina, watch this, and he slices off his fingers, the way it's lit, the way his eyes look at that point, because it's the first Freddy design, and it's not streamlined, it's rough on around the edges, and he is absolutely terrifying. There are the imagery of different parts of his nightmare gags in this, including the stretched out arms across the alley. I know it's puppeteered. I know it looks like he's got two springs for hands. It's still very, very unnerving. it's very off kilter in by design. And I think that the concept itself of you can't escape a slasher even in your dreams is not just universal, but it's also just gut-wrenching. That you could not escape a villain of that nature even in your sleep. And I do think that it's a testament to Craven's ability to mix light with dark in terms of the optimism versus the despair and the terror that makes this a strong script. Frankly, they shouldn't have the coda at the end where Freddy drives him off in the Freddy car and Ronnie Blakely gets pulled through as a puppet doll or rubber blow up doll, because it would be better for Nancy to just be able to walk out. Like, I want her to have a happy ending. I understand that the coda is fun and it gives us those sequels, but the better ending would be for her to walk out and everything's all right, because the idea of how you kill Freddy at the end of that first movie, which is, I take back every bit of energy I gave you, is astounding. It's one of the best endings to a horror movie that could exist. And unfortunately, Bob Shea fucked it up. not a dig at Bob Shea, but he fucked it up. Number one, Nightmare on Elm Street. Hell of a good time.
Yeah. I'll clarify. I mean, I think Terminator 2 is a better action movie and more fun.
But
and better written and better acted and more interesting and better shot.
Yeah. Just like Avatar, the Way of Water.
You don't say affirmative or some shit like that. You say no problemo. Yeah. But it's a great movie. I did get a list from Carol, which she says, hello, Ryan. I mean, hello, real nerds. Thanks, Ryan, for giving me a heads up when you were scheduled to record. That made me feel wanted always, because we love your list. Wow, 1984 was a long time ago, before James was born. Speaking of James, we were in Michigan a few weeks ago visiting and meeting our new granddaughter, 8 days old, when we arrived. We had a wonderful visit. We also visited James at work and saw how things are going. I was so happy to see some of your work, Brad. Oh, shout out, Brad.
I've been working on his stuff, yeah.
That made it even more fun.
Thank you.
1984 has several classic movies that everyone seems to know. Difficult to put them in order, but here goes. Number 10, I'm surprised this is an 11. This is Spinal Tap. These mockumentary comedies are a favorite of ours. I haven't seen it in a long time, or it might have been higher on the list.
That is a good movie. I think on my letterbox, Spinal Tap is my number 11.
I think it's like my 12, 13, something like that. It is a good movie.
It is.
Number nine, The Terminator. What can I say? I'm sure you already talked about it. I'm pretty sure you love it more than I do. Like the next one. Number eight, Ghostbusters. Not much I can say here either. Number seven, Romancing the Stone, which is a really fun movie. I think of this as a Hart family favorite. Fun, adventure, action, humor, and romance. We named our Jeep Wrangler Little Mule. Yes. Oh, why you too, Carol? Why? Number six, Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. Yes, it's an odd number, but it's still part of the Star Trek story. I like it better than five, The Final Frontier. It also sets the stage for four, The Journey Home, which is my personal favorite of the original cast. Okay, I agree. Number five, The Karate Kid. Another movie everyone knows and most people love. Agreed. Number four, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. This is not my favorite of the indie series. James and I have had many discussions about it because he loves it and I have issues. I won't go into details here. That would take too long. I will say there are parts that I love, which is why it's here. Ah, number three, Footloose. This is my favorite dance movie. Love the music, the dancing, and the message. And, of course, the greatest movie of all time. It's the greatest movie of all time with a smiley face. Number two, Starman. An alien accidentally falls to Earth in Wisconsin and takes the shape and voice of a man who recently died. He and the man's widow begin a trip across the country to meet the spaceship that is coming to pick him up. He is being hunted by those who would want to capture him. Jeff Bridges is great. Red light, stop. Green light, go. Yellow light, go very fast. And one of our family road trips, we visited the crater where they filmed that ending. That was fun. We saw the very large array satellite dishes from the movie Contact on the same trip. All right. Number one, Places in the Heart. See, you learned something new. This is an amazing movie. The story is about a widow with two children during the Great Depression. She is desperate to save her home and is helped by a blind boarder and a black handyman. It is a very difficult time and the culture for all of the characters on so many levels. It is beautifully written, acted, and filmed. Sally Fields, John Malkovich, and Danny Glover are all outstanding.
You had me at Depression era and John Malkovich.
I've never even heard of this. I'm going to have to watch it.
I do want to watch this now. Yeah.
There's an honorable mention of The Muppet Steak Manhattan.
Fuck yeah.
And okay, there you have it. As always, I look forward to listening to your lists. Hope to see you soon. Love ya, Carol. Thanks, Carol, as always. Starman, the forgotten Carpenter film.
It's one of the few Carpenter films that gets an Oscar nomination, that's for sure.
Good stuff.
I've got some comments.
Cool, go for it.
Zach Thomas from Artface Studios said that 1984 has a ton of classics, but if he had to pick, The Neverending Story, Ghostbusters, and Spinal Tap.
Nice.
And then Alex Weimer, Augusta Weimer, is excited about 1984. He gave us 12, starting with Greystoke, The Legend of Tarzan.
Oh, shit. I haven't seen that movie in forever.
Number 11, Dreamscape. Number 10, Trancers. Number 9, Johnny Dangerously, which I'm surprised isn't on, like, Kino or Shout.
Yeah, that is crazy.
Yeah. Number 8, The Last Starfighter. Set up for a lot of good Clerks animated series jokes.
Holy crap. Randall's going to be a starfighter? No. If you remember the game, it was to build blocks, essentially.
Number 7, 2010, which is the sequel to 2001.
That's the year we make contact, baby.
Yeah.
Why did I say it that way?
Number 6, City Heat. Number 5, Red Dawn.
City Heat's Eastwood and Reynolds. Yeah, it's a fine movie.
Yeah, Red Dawn for number 5. Mm. 4, Repo Man.
Oh, wow.
Which I haven't seen.
I haven't seen that in a while.
3, Leo. Top Secret.
Oh, fuck yes.
2, Terminator.
Nice.
Terminator. And number 1, Starman.
Wow.
Yeah.
Anything else?
No, that's all I got.
Well, a little light on the comments, fellas.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought we'd get a lot. 1984 is quite the year.
I know. A lot of beloved classics here. And again, one of our shortest film sessions ever because we all had sort of consensus on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I had to. The fewest trailers I think I had to look for.
Wow.
Because we only had, like, I don't know, 3 different ones.
I'll be curious to see how the next one.
1994.
Which, by the way, which do you prefer? Jedi or Empire Strikes Back? Empire. Blasphemy. Empire had the better end. Yeah, yep. That movie will be on the list.
Oh, I'm sure it'll be on all our lists.
Oh, fuck, if it isn't. Thank God James isn't here.
I'm going to watch it at the Alamo in 2 weeks.
You know, you fucking lucky bastard.
Thanks for listening. Yeah, we've already talked about our next retro film explosion is 1994.
Hey, do you know what they call a film explosion in Paris?
La film explosion?
Yeah. Yes. La cinema explosion.
It's legal to carry. Sorry, I'm going to Gibraltar now.
So, yeah, I start thinking about that. Next week, I think we're... I don't know what our film of the week's going to be.
Ryan Frost kept wondering what film were they going to review.
Civil
next
War
week.
Comes out.
Yeah, probably Civil War.
You mean another Captain America movie?
I wish it was Captain America Civil War. I'd totally watch that. Yeah. Or, you know, maybe what's that vampire ballerina movie? I think that comes out too.
Abigail,
Just because, you know, I really do it because. Corinne always expects us to do, you know, the big mainstream ones. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to put some random horror film in here just because.
She probably expects it because we say we usually do the mainstream movie.
We do. But yeah, thanks for the list. Thanks for listening. And we will see you at the movies.
We'll see you in 1994.
I'm telling you all, it's a film explosion! Film explosion!
Thanks for listening to Real Nerds Podcast, a Nebulous Visions production. Stream or download episodes, read articles at realnerdspodcast.com. Stream us on Apple or Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or iHeartRadio. Follow us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast. Twitter and Instagram, at Real Nerds. Watch us on YouTube, Real Nerds Podcast. Email us at realnerds@gmail.com. Call us at 720-6NERDS5. Thank you to Sparks Mandrill, Mike at Plan 9 Studios, and Bolognium for all of our groovy theme songs. And that's how you fucking do it.